Could have been more. What, you think he should have walked away with a hat trick?
Yeah, I could. If you saw the Gundo right before I went off, I should have been there. So, but that's how it is.
Steady with the language.
Oh, sorry. Oh, sorry.
Not good language in this country.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graeme Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Jan Bilton.
Hello.
And Terry DeFellon.
Hello.
Yeah, getting all a little bit excited, all the tensions building up in the season. Club football came back from the international break. We're counting down now. We're counting down to the World Cup. The World Cup's going to be with us in just a few weeks. I think it's like 7 weeks now away, because we're in October. It's basically next month. Next month, we've got a World Cup. Usually, before a World Cup, we've got things in the way, like cup finals and things like that, and Champions League finals. Not this time. This time, we'd just be playing a regular league game 1 week, and then World Cup the next. It is going to be a strange time. So we've only got a few more episodes between now and then we sort of get into World Cup mode. And then we won't be in World Cup mode, because it will be compressed. We'll have 4 episodes about the World Cup. And then it'll be Christmas. You'd think that we wouldn't have much time to talk about stuff. But, you know, really with football, is like, you know, there's always something to talk about, isn't there, Terry? Always something that we can pick out from the weekend that we've watched all that football. And we can say, do you know what? I think the punters would like to listen to this week.
But can I just say that actually that last bit that Graham's just said, for the benefit of the listeners, that was the closest we've got to a content calendar in the 10 plus years. That we've been doing this podcast. All right, okay, cool. But it's been an interesting weekend, hasn't it, Graham? For various reasons, neither of us have watched much football.
Well, no, I haven't, yeah.
I mean, I've watched 2 games, and that, for me, is not much football. But, I mean, there's lots and lots of football that I've missed out on, that I've skipped, I've not been able to watch, I've not even caught highlights because I've been a super busy guy. You know, I only actually found out I knew the result between Palace and Chelsea, but the texture of that match was entirely lost to me, even though I was listening to Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, and we've seen the highlights of that game, because like Terry, I was taken out of football watching this weekend. I know we wrote a box set telling you about the 7 games to watch between Friday and Sunday, and we do that most weeks. But personally, I spent that time pretty much entirely in a cinema. I was at the BFI for their 60 Years of Bond weekend, which was pretty damn amazing. But that's a story for another podcast, listeners. And if you listen to the Odd Job Pod with me and Terry and Gary, then I'm sure I'll regale that when we record another Odd Job Pod, which will probably be in a couple of months' time or so.
Probably, yeah.
But I did watch Match of the Day. I got home about midnight and I threw on Match of the Day, because obviously I had been keeping up with the scores and I did know that Arsenal won the North London Derby, which was great. But all I saw on the day was the fact that Chelsea had won at Palace. No surprise there, was it, Jan? But it was more involved than that, wasn't it?
There was all sorts of goings on and chicanery of the highest order. Chelsea were very fortunate to end the game with 11 men on the pitch, because Thiago clearly, deliberately handled the ball. While he was lying on the floor, it was like a scrabble for a loose ball in rugby. Because he literally put his hand out like that, didn't he, to knock it away from, it was Ayew, I think, it was bearing down on him. Yeah, and didn't walk. And it's not like we haven't got cameras watching everyone. So surely they should have got that decision right, shouldn't they? It's quite disappointing. We should talk about that at some point, about VAR. I thought Palace were absolutely robbed there. It's good to see that even though Chelsea have got a likeable manager now, that they're still massively evil. If you didn't used to manage Brighton, Terry, he's likable. I think he seems like a likable chap, kind of chap you'd have around on Sunday lunch, and your nan would probably be quite happy to talk to him. But not anymore. No, he's just as evil as the rest of them, isn't he?
But Terry, you were saying you feel like you were let down by Radio 5. Here comes the BBC. Why do you pay your license fee if you're not going to get service, eh?
Yeah, well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like reaching for my copy of the Daily Mail and brandishing it at a member of staff of the BBC. I listened to the post-match coverage on Sports Report about that game, and it was all about Conor Gallagher. And fair enough, because Conor Gallagher played for Palace, was brilliant for Palace last season, scores the winning goal, doesn't celebrate. You know, it's all very sportsman-like and all of that stuff. But they completely bypassed Thiago Silva's handball. I knew nothing of this. It was only until a few minutes before we started recording that I was told about it. And I went off into a bloody middle-aged white bloke rage, which is, you know, it's no good for anyone. Mercifully, I'm locked in my room, so no harm was done. But yeah, I just thought, well, hang on a second. If that's a major talking point from the game, then why aren't we talking about this? I don't want to get into some big rant about the mainstream media keeping stuff from us, because it's just football. And I do acknowledge it's just football. But, you know, I was quite incensed hearing about that and felt it's a London derby. It's against Chelsea. We have a reasonably good record against Chelsea. I was optimistic we might be able to, you know, particularly catch, you know, Brian Potter unawares. And they were helped, it would seem, by the referee. So, yeah, I'm afraid I'm a little bit miffed. And I don't share your, you know, your warm and fuzzy feelings about Brian Potter whatsoever.
Oh, he's Brian Potter again now.
Back to Brian now. Sorry. Well, you know. Brighton and then Chelsea. This is atrocious taste in football clubs. Atrocious.
He's gaslighting you, Terry. That's what he's doing. He's doing this just to get at you.
He is. What you don't know, lads, is I ran over his dog about 5 years ago.
He's actually driven you to now to the where you've got the same opinion on the BBC as Nadine Dorris. He has gaslit you to such an extent. You're now an awful right-wing ERG Tory.
I am. I'm the local Conservative club around the corner from me had coaches to Birmingham. I wish I'd got on it now. I could have gone up there for the conference.
In fairness, I suppose I should stand in defence of the BBC here as far as balance was concerned. So I think in fairness to them, they are radio. So as far as questionable refereeing decisions are concerned, what can they say? When you've got a piece of narrative that just lands on your lap, like Conor Gallagher scoring his first league goal for Chelsea, a bit of a stunner at that, 90th minute and a match-winning goal. So, of course, that's going to be the dominant one. But yeah, Thiago Silva, in my mind, should have been sent off. But it's one of those weird things where it is a sending off, but it's also not a sending off. It's whatever the guy in black deems it to be. It can be both things at the same time. But I think what is more troublesome about it is that the fact that it's just downright cheating. We've been so used, I think, to seeing decisions given, especially for handball, where we say, how the hell is that handball? And people are getting penalties against them, people are getting sent off. And so when we get something that's like this, which is a denial of, well, potential denial of a goal-scoring opportunity, he was about, I'd say, about 35 yards out, quite wide, but they were the last men, and Thiago Silva bats it away. There was this great angle they showed on Match of the Day where Ayew is bearing down, and he's about to play the ball, and the ball just disappears from him. It's almost double takes. What happened to the ball there? There was no way that could have possibly disappeared in front of me, and yet it did. So I wonder if it's more about the injustice of it rather than the event itself. It's more like we've set the rules up now so tightly so that we can get consistency in the game that by the letter of the law, if the referee doesn't deem it to be a goal-scoring opportunity or thinks that there was still a lot of football left in that play, then he can't send off Thiago. Steve Parrish came on to Twitter to say that he handballs it twice. So he should have got a yellow card for both of those, much like in the way that Martinelli was sent off last season for two fouls in the same play. But I think if you look at the first one, that's an accidental one. No one ever gets booked for that one because he was on the floor when the ball hit his arm. But yeah, it was so, so blatant and just downright cheaty. And yeah, if I was a Palace fan, I would be absolutely foaming at the mouth at the injustice of it, especially because, of course, he sets up the equalising goal and obviously changes the game completely because they were 1-0 up at the time. Probably should have been 2-0 up with Ayew. Well, Ayew wasn't going to score, was he? Let's face it.
This is the thing, isn't it? Because, I mean, you're entitled to that opinion, yeah. And you may well be right. But, Jordan Ayew is Crystal Palace's number 9. So who the hell is the referee to decide whether or not, you know, yeah. What, you're a pundit now, are you, ref? As well as being a referee, like you're like saying, oh yeah, in my opinion, he wouldn't have scored. Like, he is our striker. So, I mean, who is the ref to say?
Yeah.
I mean, if he is the last man, you know, maybe it's the distance, I don't know. I mean, again, I still haven't seen it, so I don't know. The referee should not be put in a position where he has to make a judgment call, where he or she has to make a judgment call as to whether or not a player in that situation. That is a subjective opinion and should not be in the laws.
Well, Terry, why not do this live? Why not hunt it down?
I'm just going to get angry.
Yeah, I know. That's what I want. We want anger.
All right, I'm going to go on mute while I do it. You go and talk about
something
else.
No, don't go on mute. I want to hear you.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Okay.
That's not going to happen.
Okay. Well, Jan, what do you think? I mean, am I being a bit overdramatic about this? Or are we more inclined to think, if that was just a normal handball, if he hadn't have like made such a deliberate movement there, would we be so incensed about the fact that he wasn't sent off? Is there a thing where he's just so obviously cheated, we feel like we need him to be punished more for the same offence?
Yes. Yes and yes and yes. So most handballs that I see, I kind of roll my eyes when they're given.
Yeah.
Because the ball strikes the arm below the oxter. And most of the time, I think that the player doesn't have a clue what's going on. The ball just hits him. And it's the letter of the law, so they give it. And I have to roll my eyes and deal with it, right? Now, the ball hit Thiago's arm as he went down. And then he moved his arm and pushed the ball out of the way, right? So there's a difference between those two, which he nicely demonstrated within one flowing movement. There was an argument, I think, that they made in the highlights. They didn't make this on the beam. They just said, look, the ref or the guy in on VAR could have thought that there's a player coming across centrally, but there wasn't.
Yeah.
There was no one that would have caught him. It would have created a clear goal-scoring opportunity. And your thoughts on whether I would have finished that or not, you know, purely your own. And I don't think the ref would have taken that into account, because I think he's quite a handy player, actually. But it was clearly a denial of an opportunity on goal, and he should have gone for it. I think it's absolutely crazy.
I've just looked at it.
Yeah?
I've just looked at it, and it is quite close to the halfway line.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of ground between the ball. You know, it's quite funny the way I just like goes, I'm sure I had a ball here a minute ago. And it's possible that the referee might have taken the view, well, you know, you're quite some distance. But if he is the last man there, then I would say that that is still a clear goal-scoring opportunity.
Yeah.
And it's a pretty blatant handball. I mean, you know, he obviously thinks he's been fouled by Ayew is what it is. But he's actually lost control of the tackle. He's let Ayew go, so he's gone down and he's pushed the ball out. It's pretty cynical. And it's pretty crap. I can still be angry about it and still not actually be angry about the fact that he didn't get sent off, because really, you know, I mean, it's just shitty play.
Yes.
It's just a shitty thing to do. He's lost the guy and his way of dealing with it. I mean, it's super professional, to be fair, but it's still shitty.
Yeah, I don't want us to come across as a fact that we're completely opposed to the dark arts or chicanery.
By no means.
We do like a little bit more effort involved in them, don't we, really? If you're going to dive, make it a good one. Don't just fall over. Try to hoodwink the referee. There was no hoodwinking involved in this one, was there, Terry? It was
No. It was clumsy and just rubbish. I mean, I enjoy the dark arts and chicanery, and we've had this conversation on this podcast. So I don't enjoy it when it's being used against my team, I should say, but no one does. But I, in principle, chicanery is part of professional football and should be celebrated, frankly. But this wasn't. This was just like a guy who just couldn't cope with the fact that Jordan Ayew had done him.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I think, because occasionally you see a player that feels he's been fouled and goes over, and as he goes over or as he's kind of hitting the ground, they grab the ball sometimes, don't they?
Yeah.
To kind of go, well, I've clearly won it. It's almost to kind of push that in the referee's mind. You can kind of see why they're doing that, to achieve that end. But his was just, it was too blatant for me. So
He should have doubled down, just picked up the ball. He should have doubled and grabbed the ball and brought it in and kind of like taken it out and dared the referee to send him off. Said, I've been fouled. Look at me. Ugh!
Yeah. What he should have done is just picked up the ball, ran up the other end, and then dived down onto the ground and touched it down behind the touchline at the other end. Yeah, created a new sport there and then.
Or recreated an old one.
All right, we could let this descend into talking about the worst things in football, but why don't we talk about something that's actually quite good and makes you sort of think, wow, football's really quite exciting, isn't it? Even if the team that he plays for is a little bit, you know, evil. I'm talking about Erling Haaland now, because he scored yet another hat-trick this weekend. Phil Foden scored a hat-trick as well, so hopefully Haaland probably just let him keep the ball, even though they've got plenty of balls there now. So maybe he just said, oh, well, you keep it this week, because I've already got a couple this season anyway, so I ain't got room in my house for him. It's going to be like, I've got footballs bloody everywhere in my house. Jan, he's pretty good, isn't he?
He's got no right foot, mate. I keep saying this to you. He's got no right foot. He's overrated. You can take your three back-to-back hat-tricks. Were they back-to-back? He's three hat-tricks anyway this season. I'm sorry, you can chuck them all in the bin because you won them by cheating. He hasn't used his right foot for anything. He's a one-trick pony. I'm sorry. No, of course, I'm joking. He is an absolute force of nature. He doesn't look like he should be as skillful and agile as he actually is, because he's massive. He doesn't look as graceful as he's running. It looks like he's just covering ground like a bear running after a startled cyclist. You know what I mean? You see them just bawling along. But you can't knock what the guy's doing. And he's, you know, as I'm, Terry will give us some background, I think, of how he's been doing this for a little while. But I mean, he was just scary. And all right, United were poor, but, you know, everyone seems to be poor when they're faced with him. It's like it's unfair almost. He is just so powerful. He can get on the end of things that you wouldn't expect anybody else to get to because of his pace. I mean, the goal he scored, I think, during the week, if it wasn't, it was last weekend, where, I mean, it was a tap-in, they usually are, to be fair, but he was airborne with his left foot, not his right, because he doesn't know how to use it, and any other player wouldn't have reached that with the consistency that he does reach balls that just seem to be lost causes. He's powerful, he's scary because of his size and power, and I think now, because of the reputation he's got for himself, he's even more intimidating, even more scary. And I think teams would probably just look at him and go, well, you know, how do we keep this monster quiet? And of course, the team that manages to do that, well, good for them. But you've still got all the other superstars that City can throw at you. I know it was his third hat-trick, but Foden was outstanding in that game, as was De Bruyne. I think Foden probably deserved a little bit more coverage of that. I think it's Haaland's, obviously, because, you know, he is who he is grabbing all the headlines. But I suppose that's a good thing for Foden. He can just quietly get on with it. But, you know, you stop him, how are you going to stop the others? It's he's a sight to behold.
Terry, you described Haaland as the human cheat code in the box set last weekend. Now, you've watched him for years. Is he getting better, or is this what he's been like all along? Or is the Premier League even more of a farmers' league than the Bundesliga?
Well, it certainly lends itself to the farmers' league, doesn't it? It's got to be said, but no, it's not quite like that. What Guardiola is doing with Haaland is he is utilising them as the very, very, very tip of the attack. He doesn't really have to do a great deal more than just make certain that he is there when the ball arrives. And this is something that I think at City have sort of lacked. It would be silly to say that he's the final piece in the puzzle. That just isn't, it's the wrong analogy. There's no jigsaw puzzle involved with this with City. This is a team that has won multiple championships in recent years. They are the full jigsaw. It's a different, there's no real analogy for it. What it is that if they lacked anything, is that they lacked that kind of number nine who could just be there just at that moment, just to finish things off, just to close things out. And that's what Haaland has been doing this season. In previous seasons, when he was at Dortmund, he was a little bit more involved in build-up players, I think, as far as I can see. And you'd see him maybe seeing a little bit more different variety of goals from him. Still massively prolific. 24 matches for Dortmund last season in an injury-hit season. Only 21 starts, 22 goals from that. Played 28 matches the previous season, 27 goals. And in his first season, the half season, he scored 13 goals in 11 starts, 15 matches all told. He's averaged a goal, over a goal per 90 minutes since his first year at Salzburg in 2018. I mean, he is ridiculously prolific and scores goals. And Guardiola sees this and goes, well, look, I don't want you necessarily to be like Lewandowski and maybe play a little bit deeper and get more stuck and involved. I've got De Bruyne, I've got Foden, and I've got others who will do all of that for me. I've got players who can do that for you. You just make certain that you're there and score. I mean, these touches per goal is absolutely ridiculous. The number of times, not so much the number of times he goes, his touches per goal is not exactly the number of times he touches it, but his touches per goal is something like 13 and a half per goal. He's 187 touches so far this season. He scored 14. Compare that to Mbappe, who's touched the ball 394 times this season and has scored 8. Now, Mbappe plays a different role for PSG. It doesn't mean that Haaland is better than Mbappe. It just means that Mbappe plays a different role for PSG than he does. But it just illustrates what Haaland is there for and what he's doing. And it's just working so well because City are just so good at creating chances. They're just so ridiculously good at creating chances. And, you know, they're going to win the league by an absolute streak as long as Haaland stays fit.
That's the main thing, isn't it? And there has been that question mark over him for the last couple of seasons while he was at Dortmund, wasn't there? He is a very large player. So there is this sort of feeling that can he carry that around? Can he go through the rigours of a 50-game season? I mean, he's obviously got the power and the strength in there. And there are players that I don't really know who to compare him to, because even if you look at players that are tall, have quite an impressive physique and have the sort of presence and or the global status that he's got now, you're really looking at players like Cristiano Ronaldo and Zlatan, people like that, who have had huge careers and have scored a hell of a lot of goals. I look at Haaland, though, and I think this is the player who Ronaldo has been trying to be all his career, and he's better at it. The numbers are ridiculous, and I think it's very useful to that you mentioned Mbappe as well, because this is what's happened now. These two are being built up as the new Messi and Ronaldo, aren't they? These are clearly the two that are going to be the ones who are going to be dominating the Ballon d'Ors for years on end, even though there are plenty of other really, really, really talented players out there at the moment, talented young players. But obviously, it's the goal scorers and the ones and the really exciting attackers that dominate that. And even when you get those, you've got like players like Zlatan and Lewandowski, who just don't seem to capture the imagination or don't get as many goals for the big Spanish teams as Ronaldo and Messi did. But is this going to be these two now for the next 10 years?
Yeah, I think so. I think that Haaland and Mbappe is going to be the new Ronaldo and Messi, the rivalry. Who do you think is better, Mbappe or Haaland? In the way that people used to ask, who do you think is better, Ronaldo or Messi? That's the new standard now. And it's a victory for the Petro clubs, for, you know, PSG. It's a victory for Qatar. It's a victory for the Emirates because they've got those players now. And although Florentino Perez does insist that they'll be back for Mbappe, and it'll be interesting to see where that happens. But if that doesn't, then we've got a generation of the top player in PSG, the top player at Manchester City, in their mind, hoovering up the trophies and having this rivalry going on, which is huge business. I mean, like, I think it's probably worth knowing about Messi versus Ronaldo in and of itself was massive content, is massive content, still is now, even though they're now approaching the, you know, the end of their careers. It's, you know, there's money in those hills. You know, there's value. The rivalry sort of like started but when Dortmund played PSG a few years ago and Haaland scored a goal. And it, for a while, he was doing this kind of meditative Zen-like goal celebration, which I thought was a bit weak, to be honest with you. In the return leg, Mbappe scored and then imitated it. It was after the game when they won the tie back in the dressing room. Mbappe was sort of like imitating Haaland. And there was a bit of social media bants between the two, which all seemed a bit staged, if you ask me. So I suspect that they know that there's opportunities for this kind of narrative. So we know how important narratives are in football, in anything. Of course, it has to be backed up with numbers, with talent. These guys produce. You know, they are brilliant. They're both amazing footballers and they score goals. So yes, obviously they capture the imagination and I imagine will do. And even if Mbappe does go to Real Madrid, in fact, it might even be even more intense if he does go to Real Madrid, because Real Madrid are literally a royalty. So if you're into that kind of stuff, you've got all of that to look forward to.
Yes, and if you are into that sort of stuff, welcome to The Sound of Football.
We talk about this kind of thing all every week. Don't go away.
Yes, regular listeners, we're not just doing this just for the metrics. This is actually an important conversation that we should be having. Honest.
You know, all of the 15-year-olds that are listening to this for the first time that won't have listened to anything up to the last 10 minutes. And I'd also like to welcome my own son to this, who will be listening to me on this for the first time by choice, not on a long trip up to Sunderland in the car.
But it's important, 15-year-olds, in case you haven't figured it out by now yourself. And most 15-year-olds are a lot smarter than most 50-odd-year-olds. So, you know, apologies for telling you this psychic. But it is business. And that's the key thing, of course, is that it's something to get into, of course, and enjoy. But it is also business. There are, you know, old men with lots and lots of money who look upon these kind of things and see an opportunity to extract cash from you. So just be mindful of this. But that's the last piece of advice I ever give to a 15-year-old.
It's interesting just thinking about how much Mbappe would go for if he went to Real Madrid, which I think you're right, Terry, is something that's going to happen. And they'll probably just wait for the end of his contract. But you think about Haaland, how much that guy is now worth. If someone wanted to prize him away from Manchester City, for whatever reason, why he'd want to leave, I don't know, because he's got such an incredible team around him and probably the finest manager, coach in the world. But this would make the previous records just look ridiculous. I mean, it's got to be north of £300 million he would go for. It would be crazy.
What would City do with the money?
Yeah, I agree. I'm talking hypothetically.
I agree with you. I'm reinforcing your point. I mean, like, there isn't a value. There's no price. City do not need any money, right? So they will get rid of. They will let Haaland go when they are ready to. Or unless Erling says, "I want to move on. I want a new challenge." You know, and maybe they'll come to an agreement for him to move on and seek a new challenge. But you could put a billion pounds, but that's approximately $5.50 in today's currency. But you could put $1 billion in front of Manchester City, and they'd say, "Well, we can't use that $1 billion to replace him. So why? And we don't need the money. So why on earth would they sell him?"
Yeah, yeah. They don't even need it to conform to financial fair play because they've got lawyers right to do that for them.
God, I don't need it. Exactly. I mean, they could take that £1 billion and spend it on their legal costs, admittedly, but you know.
Yeah, it is ridiculous. But as you say, the only way that he would leave is because he wants to leave. And I suppose that is what really put the heat under the fire of the Messi and Ronaldo rivalry, was because the fact that they were playing against each other in El Clasico at least twice a year.
That's the key, Graham. Would they want to recreate the whole thing and like go Mbappe to Real Madrid and Haaland to Barcelona?
Yeah.
These are things that could happen. But then maybe there are other options like, you know, like, yeah, regular Champions League or maybe some kind of other unrefined league.
Some crazy idea that someone like Florentino Perez could come up with, I suppose. But this is it. I mean, he said this week, didn't he? Going on a couple of weeks ago, Roger Federer had a very emotional retirement match, and it was everywhere, wasn't it? I'm sure even Jan must have realised that that was a thing that happened.
I don't watch any Formula One, Graham. I've told you.
Yeah, that's fine. That's what you're here for, Jan. That's what you're here for.
You can sit this conversation. Yeah, if you need to leave, Jan, then you know. I know, you need to take the time back.
He plays tennis. Okay, I'm sorry, I admit. I know he plays tennis, although I have as much interest in tennis as I do fucking Formula One. Yeah.
Well, the point that Perez was making was that Nadal and Federer have played each other so many times over the years, and no one gets bored of the fact that they've played each other, usually many times, even in 1 year. And he was using this analogy to say, then we should be having Liverpool playing Real Madrid every year at least, because they've only played each other, I think he said, 9 times in 67 years. I haven't checked his figures. I'm assuming he's quite clued up. He's thumbed through his Rothmans or whatever he's using, and he's come up with that number. And I'm willing to take it at face value because he's a figures orientated guy, isn't he? Yes, which of course is just a roundabout way of saying, yeah, he still wants his European Super League, despite the fact that it's deeply unpopular and it's very, very divisive. Jan, does he have a point?
No. No, he doesn't have a point. Because Nadal and Federer, he's another one who does the tennis, isn't he?
They both do play
each other. They both do the tennis.
At tennis.
But they meet each other in finals. They don't meet each other on a Tuesday night. Do you know what I mean? It's just not the same. They've had to play, you know, ordinary jobbing tennis players to get to the final. I'd imagine some very good ones as well. But yeah, joking aside, it makes those events what they are, that they've battled and it's a showcase and it's the final of Wimbledon or the one they do in Australia or the one they do in America or whatever. But the point is that that's what makes it special for people who like the tennis. It's not happening every week. And that's what makes, to Perez's point as well, actually, about Liverpool playing Real, that's what makes it special, that it is so rare. And that should be celebrated. Sometimes football tries to engineer more and more stuff that they think is just going to be a big showcase. But the reality is that, you know, the World Cup every 4 years, not every two, is good for that reason. And big clubs playing each other in a showcase final, like the Champions League final, or, you know, the Papa John's trophy, is good for that particular reason because it's so rare.
Yeah. Terry? No.
Yeah, I entirely agree with my colleague there, absolutely. I mean, Florentino Perez doesn't seem to be willing to embrace the principle of less being more. And yeah, I mean, those matches between great tennis players happen at the highest level after going through rigorous tournaments and playing a lot of hard-fought matches and getting to that point. You know, Liverpool versus Real once a season, twice a season would just be run-of-the-mill. I mean, I guess what I would add to this is that all football was initially regionalised, isn't it? So football in our country was regionalised once upon a time, wasn't it? In a lot of other countries, it was regionalised and then it suddenly became national. It's possible that you would have got people who would have been against nationalising, you know, the Football League back in the day and saying that it's not authentic and it shouldn't be allowed to happen. But it did happen, and it happened because there was, a genuine desire for it to happen, and it proved to be very, very popular. So if we extend that to, say, our continent, say, from our individual nations to our continent, and then there is a view that actually we should be playing our football across the entire continent and we should be playing, our league structure should be played across an entire continent. I'm not actually against that as a matter of principle, but there's no appetite for it whatsoever apart from a very small number of rich blokes. You know, those are the only people who want this. So if everyone wants it, or if a critical mass of people want a European Super League, then, you know, I would probably say, well, fair enough. Then maybe that's the way that goes. But there's no evidence or sign whatsoever that there's a move for that. If anything, national league structures are more popular now than they've probably ever been. So there's genuinely no need or appetite for it. The only need is obviously because, you know, these clubs, Real Madrid and certainly Barcelona have managed their clubs, and definitely Barca are managing their clubs to a point where they need that because their funding formula just doesn't work. They need more cash. And I'm afraid the reality is that, and, you know, I don't know whether this will happen to Real Madrid, but they might just have to realize, deal with the fact that if they messed up their finances to the point where they can't cope without forming a Super League that no one wants, then they're just going to have to fail. And then they won't be playing Liverpool hardly at all. So that's just how it is, because that's sport. That's how sport works.
Yeah, that is how sports work, and which is why the Haaland Mbappe rivalry probably won't be that great if they stay at City and PSG, because there's no way both of them are going to make it to a Champions League final, is there?
Well, this is the thing, isn't it, Graham? This is the thing. Will they ever make it? I mean, maybe this is the time. This is their time that they will do it. If I was Guardiola, going back to Haaland, if I was Guardiola, I'd play him up to the World Cup. I'd rest him to the World Cup. And then what I would do is, and I would pick and choose his matches as they go into the knockout stage of the Champions League. because I think you've got to get that boy fit and ready so that they can make it to, up to the final and scoring in the Champions League. I prioritise Haaland for the Champions League, just in case. He has picked up injuries. PSG spent all this money on retaining Mbappe because they want the Champions League. The wet dream, I think, is Qatar v Emirates, PSG v City, Mbappe versus Haaland in the UEFA Champions League final. That's the wet dream, isn't it? You know, on one level, I would look forward to that. But on another level, it's all, God, this is just the ghastliness of commercial football. And isn't it awful? I'd rather watch White Leaf instead.
Yes, the Champions League final obviously will be dominated by those two clubs going forward. And if anything, when they both get to the final, at least one team will actually win it. That's actually how it still works, isn't it? But who knows? If Perez still has any influence in UEFA, Real Madrid might win it, even if they're not in the final. But who's to say? The future is very difficult to predict. That's why we don't make predictions on this podcast, isn't it, Chet?
Very true.
Yeah.
Very true.
Right. That's true. I mean, even when we write our 7 previews of the football that's going to happen this weekend, we don't make predictions. Well, Jan does. Jan nearly always makes a prediction. And how did your prediction go this week? The tight 1-0?
Yeah, the Braga is going to get a nipper 1-0 in Porto. Yeah, it went... do you think anyone's going to look this up? No, sorry, listeners, for the 15-year-olds that are still here. There is a league in Portugal, believe it or not, and it's a very good one. But Braga went to Porto and had their arses handed to them 4-1.
Yeah, all the 15-year-olds know what's going on in Portugal because this is on their career mode in FIFA, isn't it?
My son's just got FIFA 23 and he's on a White Leaf career mode. And guess who he signed on a freebie the other day? Cristiano Ronaldo. How the mighty has fallen.
Yeah, I don't think he'd go to White Leaf because we don't have a live TV gig, but I suppose we'd get one if Ronaldo did actually turn up to Church Road. Possibly. I think they'd probably find the cameras coming down there for that one. But what games are we going to be watching this weekend? Well, believe it or not, try not to get too mad, but WSL started just a couple of weeks ago, and what do you know? Yeah, they're on an international break now.
International break?
Already?
Another international break.
Yeah.
You wait for the football to come along,
yeah,
and then they tease you with a few games, and then you're stuck. International break, Jesus.
Yeah. See, this is what happens now with professionalisation in the women's game. You've got to start moaning about international breaks now. This is just a natural progression, isn't it, for the women's game? Just moaning about international football. Especially because it's a friendly. England playing USA. USA, do they even play football? All right, they're world champions, but twice over. A few times over. But that's on Friday night. That's on ITV and STV, because so Scottish viewers can watch the European champions take on the world champions. And I think they'll solidly get behind England for that game. But this weekend, we've got a fairly mixed bag of fixtures because the A-League kicks off on Saturday, on Friday, actually. But we'll be previewing we'll get Gary to come in and preview the Sydney versus Melbourne Victory game. Sydney did pretty poorly last season. Victory finished second, I think, in the table, but didn't do that well in the postseason. But we've got Arsenal-Liverpool on Sunday. And Terry, we've got Der Klassiker on Saturday, just when Bayern are getting good again.
Yeah, and Dortmund got beat by Cologne as well at the weekend. So that's going to be a game, an interesting game to preview.
Yeah, well, Cologne are having a decent season and a bit of a local derby there anyway. So
yeah, it's true.
Not a surprising defeat there, was it? And it was away, wasn't it? It
was away.
But if you want to see what we think of this week's fixtures, including Getafe versus Real Madrid, let's see if Getafe can take some points off of Perez and piss him off even more. Then get along to SOF Podcast, click on the link for the weekend box set and sign up, and it will arrive in your inbox on Friday lunchtime, or you can read it on the blog. But that's all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Jan Dalton and from Terry DeVellum, it's goodbye.
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 You can contact us through our website, sofpodcast.com, via Twitter, @soundoffootball, or on facebook.com/soundoffootball.
Absolute melt.
Melt? You've been watching too much Snatch.
Yeah. It's a great tale of abuse, though. The melt. What's Spanish for melt?
Melto.
El Melto.
Oh, that's cheered me right up, that head.